You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates. We get to continue our conversations in church worker wellness today and learning about recognized service organizations that help care for church workers and congregations. Thanks to Concordia University Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. Find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at cuw.edu. Live uncommon. Joining me in studio, Dr. Beverly Yonke, Executive Director for Christian Counsel with Doxology. Dr. Yonke, welcome back.
Wonderful to be back. Thanks for the invite.
And the Reverend David Fleming, Executive Director for Spiritual Care with Doxology. Pastor Fleming, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Andy. What a joy to be with you.
Oh, it's always my joy. I love when I get to sit down and talk with my Doxology friends because I just feel better when I'm done.
Me too.
I feel better throughout the process too. I learn a lot about how the great work of Doxology has provided so much wonderful care for church workers and for congregations as well through those church workers. So let's talk about the Doxology story. Why did Doxology begin? I know it's been a few years. Why did Doxology begin? Who wants to start that story?
Dr. Yonke? I'd be happy to start the story, seeing that I have my fingerprints all over it. Doxology began really out of a conversation between me and my pastor, Pastor Harold Sinkbile at Elm Grove Lutheran Church. My husband and I had joined the church, and after a few weeks saying greetings to the pastor at the door after the sermon, he said, "We need to talk." And I knew I was in trouble. I'd only been there 3 weeks. And what he wanted to talk about, the fact that what I do as a clinical psychologist and what he did as a pastor had Venn diagram circles that overlap. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to know, in what ways are we alike? In what ways are we different? No pastor had ever asked that before, and it struck me as curious. But I was aware that in my clinical practice, I was seeing clergy, pastors' wives, and pastors' kids. And I knew for a fact that what pastors do, being faithful and caring for their people, required a great deal of energy, a great deal of time, a great deal of compassion, a great deal of insight. And often the men who came into my office were burned out, they were depressed, they were discouraged, and they were depleted. Now, admittedly, that's a clinical sin. But it occurred to me that if there are some people who are at that level of dysfunction, there are others who are struggling or not seeking care at all. So as Harold Sinkbile and I continued to talk, we began to say, what does it mean to care for the souls of these people? He, of course, interested in their spiritual well-being. I interested in their mental health. And so he began reading the church fathers in terms of what does care for the soul mean. And I read it as well, which makes me a very strange psychologist, reading third century church fathers. And we discovered a whole just absolute delight of wisdom. The wisdom of the ancient church fathers in concert with scripture and confession. How do you care for people? And discovered it wasn't being done. And that as a result, people were left with some situations that were very difficult for them to manage, depleting for them and their families, and moved to what has become the perpetual issue. Someone should do something about that, right? And we said, what if we had a conference? So we created a bit of a think tank, some seminary professors, some local clergy, Ed V, Dick Iyer. And we spent about 2 years intermittently talking about what does it mean to care for people and what are the needs that were out there. And everyone saw the same needs, which says the problem is genuine and it invites attention. So we thought, well, let's do a conference, see if anyone comes. The conference was oversubscribed immediately. And we said, maybe we should do this. Pastors, what if we had a program for pastors where we talked about the care of souls, sharing with them what we've learned, talking about not only caring for the souls of the sheep and the lambs, but caring for their own souls and for the souls of their own families. We thought that could be important. So we designed what is now known as our classic program in three parts. Pastors come for 4 days to talk about those very important soul care issues and to look at their own well-being, depression, burnout, compassion fatigue, emotional intelligence. And the conversations among the men were extremely vivid, and they were engaged, and they discovered they weren't listeners. They wanted to learn about this, and to the extent that they could, take advantage of some of the strategies and recommendations. That first session was followed up by a lay leader conference several months later. Every pastor comes back to Doxology with at least one lay leader. One guy brought a van with 10 of his lay leaders. I don't know if that was just they were very functional or very dysfunctional, but one of the two is true. And we spent a weekend with lay leaders and their pastors talking about, how do you support your pastor? How do you care for your pastor and his family? What did you actually write to your pastor in his call letter? When did you read that last? And talked about some very practical things with lay leaders, ranging from governance to stewardship to how is it that a pastor makes his way through leadership issues that are difficult for him. And we discovered that, in fact, lay leaders left the event feeling as if they were torchbearers for their pastors. We're going to take care of him. We're going to go back to our elders. We're going to do some things different, including things like, oh, really, districts have a salary wage scale? Oh, seriously, should we look at that?
Yes.
So equipping them with resources and some inspiration to care for their pastors. Third part of that classic program that grew out of the very first conversations we ever had was that pastors' wives are essential. And as the pastor's wife goes, so goes the pastor. What was that great show? Oh, my goodness, from the 80s. If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right? Yeah. And so I believe that's true. And so as pastors and wives together began to look at some of the issues that they needed to navigate in terms of enjoying all the blessings of marriage and keeping the church at bay from time to time and setting boundaries to protect family and relationships. So it started by saying the needs are astonishing in number. Let's identify the ones we think are most critical and address them as well as we can. And the avowals came in and the avowals said, don't change a thing. This is like grandma's soup. This is exactly what we need.
There are so many things now, so many questions that I want to ask now, but there's one that really sticks out for me, and that was the lay leader that came for along with the pastor. What was their why? When they went back to the congregation, what was their why for being a torchbearer? I want to look at these things and figure out how we're going to care for our pastor. These are the things we're going to do. Why was that so important to them?
So it's one of our lay leaders went, delightful guy, brilliant guy, a lawyer, said that Encore was the hardest he ever worked in his life for a conference. But he was overjoyed coming back and now kind of saw what the pastoral office is about, how critical it is, and how the congregation and pastor work together in a beautiful relationship designed by God. It's not adversarial. It's a teamwork kind of thing. And so our Savior's always been an outstanding congregation. They've always been very good, but they were even more encouraging to me and to then, interestingly, to the faculty at our school, our principal, right? There, this recognition that there's things we can do to help our church workers. My dad was an elder. I still remember the very, turned out to be sad morning when my pastor was coming up the stairs from the basement with my dad. They never met in the basement. It was odd. And, you know, I said hi to the pastor. He said, hi, Dave. And they left. And my mom said, goodbye. And then dad closed the door and broke down in tears. We let him work too hard. He had just resigned from being pastor, been unfaithful. He'd gotten into burnout, probably compassion fatigue too. And, you know, my dad felt that the leadership did not do a good job of putting some boundaries in the pastor's life, making sure he's got a pastor that's taking care of his soul, right? That he's taking care of his family, right? And so, when lay leaders know the power they have to help affect these things, they do have so much power. They do bear the torch with joy to bring that back.
So it grew from that conference. You saw the need. You continue to grow. They said, don't change the recipe. Where did it go from there? What are the services that Doxology continues to provide today?
We continue to provide that classic program, and yet we're aware that additional needs exist outside of that fundamental, just good equipment that we send them home with and strategies. So we grew in the direction of offering some additional programs, some national programs. Our first national program in 2015 was a program about Christian sexuality and talking with people about encouraging them to speak up, encouraging them to essentially understand what our faith teaches about Christian sexuality and share it with others without a sense of embarrassment or shame, but a sense of pride. This is what the Lord Jesus teaches us upon. And so we discovered that lay people were interested in our message about application of biblical wisdom to daily living. And we discovered doxology has a lot of areas where we can do that to the benefit of people. Dave, talk a little bit about the Take Heart, for example, one area in which we grew remarkably.
Yeah, so during COVID time, we, I think, talked about this before. The Office of National Mission Disaster Response folks saw that pastors were kind of overworking during COVID time to provide pastoral care to their members. And they asked Doxology to put together a program like we had used for pastors and their wives after disasters, because they saw the same kind of overworking that was going to lead to some trouble down the road. And so I think a quarter of Missouri's Synod pastors have been through a Take Heart retreat. And we also then did them for commission ministers as well. And yeah, they were refreshing and encouraging to workers.
Right. And so I think we probably were able to invite a level of trust throughout Synod. This will be valuable. This is going to be inspiring. This will equip you, increase your level of awareness, and allow you to return either to your pulpit or to your classroom or to your home in a different place than you left it. And again, those were so well received, and a sense of relief, particularly the pastors and commission ministers who said, our church cares about us enough to give this away. There was disbelief, you know, as if they were getting an invoice on the last day, just reality testing. This is provided by Office of National Mission from your church. They care about you. You can send all kinds of mail and all kinds of postcards, but when people show up to care for others, the message is really clear. So I think that was a really important part of doxology service during COVID, which we enjoyed. I think another service that's woven into our classic program is consultation. Pastors are given up to 5 hours, either with Fleming or event chaplain, or with me, and completely confidential. They may speak whatever it is that's on their heart or mind and receive either spiritual counsel, care, absolution, as it may be the case, or some psychological kinds of suggestions about what might be useful. And at first, we thought that was just kind of a nice thing to add into the program. Silly me. And so we routinely get calls from pastors saying, well, I attended in 2008. Do my hours still count? Sure. No, your hours expired. I'm so sorry. And people genuinely call with the understanding there will be help. There will be direction. There will be a sense of confidence that I'm not alone in this. And there is genuine caring available. I think if all groups could offer that same kind of, we're here for you, and actually able to follow up on that, what a gift we give our church workers. Mm-hmm. So that's been very valuable.
You mentioned a really valuable point. I want to talk about that a little bit more in just a moment, about building trust and how that really plays a key role in what you do as doxology. We are learning about doxology, and we'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates. Today we are learning about doxology with Dr. Beverly Yockey and Pastor David Fleming, learning about the services that doxology provides for church workers and congregations across the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. A little bit ago, we were talking about how doxology has continued to grow, and part of that includes gaining trust, building trust. How important is it to have trust in the one you're going to for care, whether that's the layperson going to their pastor for spiritual care or the pastor or church worker coming to doxology for that care and to continue to learn together with doxology? How important is building that trust?
there need to be reassurances in place of some very fundamental things. One, that what I'm going to hear from these individuals will indeed be a complete reflection of the faith, which I participate in and practice, so that it will be faithful wisdom, and it will be wisdom that is tailored explicitly for them. And perhaps most importantly, it's going to be wisdom which never leaves this room. Nothing is shared with anybody. It doesn't go to the district president. It isn't shared with a certain visitor. It's even shared with a spouse. And so there's complete assurance that this is just the two of us and we can come to resolution. That's one part of the trust. The second part of the trust level is that as these people leave these events, word of mouth becomes so important. How's word of mouth in clergy circles? Do guys trust what other pastors tell them? So one pastor endorses a program, do other pastors get on board with it?
I think so, right. And in fact, I think that's the main way thing actually works with pastors. Pastors are actually kind of distrustful folks. They do know about sinful nature. Maybe that's the problem firsthand. But pastors want something that's competent, that actually assists them in not giving them a program or a brief respite getting away from. They want to learn some competencies and skills that become part of their habit, their habitus as a pastor, so that they live this. And that kind of freedom to live out the calling the Lord has given you, that he's placed you there. And for our lay leaders to know they're living out their calling that the Lord's given them. And this isn't, again, adversarial, but it's we're working together on these things. And that joint kind of recognition of our roles and delighting in those, I think, builds the trust.
Mm-hmm. We're talking in the series, learning about church worker wellness. Do you have an example of how doxology has helped a congregation care for their church worker, or how it's made a difference, how doxology has made a difference for a congregation in understanding church worker wellness and what they can do practically to care for their church worker?
Yeah, so I talked before about my home congregation that way, but I can also think of another where they require their elders within a three-year period to come to the encore, that second part with the lay leaders being trained, because they saw that they were balancing the budget on the back of their church workers. They were stretching them thin in their responsibilities, of that they were way too broad, and that they were not understanding at all about the amount of work that they were asking of their pastor. So they revised their expectations. They made those expectations much more clear on what's required of a worker, and they adjusted their budget, and their stewardship increased also in response to their knowing this need and how crucial it is.
It sounds like a good plan. Sounds like a good idea. I want to know practically, what did that look like for the congregation when, a great example, like balancing the budget on the backs of their church workers. Okay, so we're stretching them thin because we don't have the money to do all the things that we think we're given to do.
Right.
So how... They revised their budget, but what did that mean for the things that weren't getting done?
Yeah, so it actually meant saying we're not able to do certain things, and to make priorities, to analyze those, to make some very difficult decisions, which these are not easy. Mm-hmm. In that case, they ended up combining their parish school with another, right? And to enable that school to flourish and to quit, you know, sort of out of pride, maybe keeping a school that they actually weren't able to fully support, and then raise the teachers' pay at the in this joint operation and take care of the congregation. But it did mean some very difficult decisions, right? Which, you know, I don't like difficult decisions. I doubt anybody else does.
This is merely an outsider's assumption, but it sounds like maybe it gave them permission to make those decisions.
I think so, because we made them analyze their priorities and the needs of their workers, right?
Because sometimes we don't want to make those decisions. We don't want to be the ones that make that decision of, oh, we have to eliminate this or we have to reduce that. But when they really had the chance to step back and look at what that meant for their church workers as well, who are an important part of that ministry, to really have the freedom, the permission to make those decisions.
Yeah.
Wow.
Live out their calling. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's on the horizon for Doxology this year, 2025?
Well, we can get a little bit of a peek into what's coming by taking a quick look at what's just passed. We took a look at where we've been and what we've done in some ways to shape where it is we'll go. And we discovered that throughout 2024, we'd been privileged to have over 40 conferences or seminars or events that served over 3,400 souls, which is more remarkable than we had ever assumed possible for two humble servants to take their wares across the country. But we realize what we're offering is valuable, so we want to continue to do that. The In His Image program has also been suggested to us and funded for us by Office of National Mission, which is a program on Christian sexuality and comes in three parts: curriculum designed for teachers, curriculum designed for spiritual care that pastors would offer, and a curriculum for the general public. And as we've offered this, people have been. So we'll continue to do that into the new year.
And we'll have two classic series, one in February in Madison, Wisconsin, and one that starts in July in Wichita, Kansas. And of course, there's the encores after that and all, and the grand reunions. But yeah, so we'll have two of our classic series again.
And we're always open to invitation by districts to do district pastor conference or district teachers conferences. And now it's as if we're being welcomed as an old friend when we show up. And that's always an encouragement and a blessing to us.
Next step, if I'm a lay person in the congregation or a pastor or a teacher, other church worker, what's the next step? I've heard what you've had to say today, and this really resonates with me. What's my next step as a layperson, a pastor, or other church worker?
So the first would be, if your pastor hasn't participated in the Doxology Classic program, give that to your congregation as a gift. And, encourage him to enroll and provide for that. We can divide it over years. And by the way, we'll never let money be an issue if somebody can't afford it. It will be a gift to your congregation and to your pastor, and it will be ongoing. If you've already attended, I'd suggest sending more people to the encore. Many congregations do that, send lay leaders almost every year, different lay leaders to an encore, and they find that it broadens their leadership base within their laity and strengthens their relationships. Additionally, they could look at our website. There's a whole host of resources there that are beneficial, and for that In His Image, if they go to the In His Image page under events, they'll find a downloadable resource on how to perhaps host one of the In His Image conferences, which all the expenses are taken care of. So those would be areas they could look at.
Good. Well, thank you both for spending this time with me today. Again, the website?
Yeah, I didn't say it, did I? www.doxology.us. U.S. at the end for what? You and me. Us, I guess.
Doxology.us. You can learn more there about the great work of Doxology. My guest today, Dr. Beverly Yonke, Executive Director for Christian Counsel with Doxology. Thank you so much, Dr. Yonke.
Thank you.
And Pastor David Fleming, Executive Director for Spiritual Care with Doxology. Thank you so much, Pastor.
Blessings to you, Andy. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.